Welcome to the Cup and Saucy Book Club. I'm Jen.
And I'm Zanna.
What's in your cup today, Zanna?
I'm drinking an herbal energy tea from my friends at the El Hussein Spice Shop in Luxor, Egypt. It has hibiscus and lotus, which is hibiscus is like in everything that we had in Egypt. And it's pretty hot here, not as hot as it is, you know, in some places of the country, but I'm having it iced. So what's in your cup today?
Well, I have got and I'm loving this. It's a new tea company for us. Mm-hmm. I'm just loving everything about it. I've got a badass babe tea from Modest Mix Teas.
Well, that seems appropriate.
Yeah. It's a gunpowder green tea with elderberries and sarsaparilla root and ginger and some other stuff. So it's got a lot of bite to it. Their slogan, though, for Modest Mix Teas is perfect for us. We fucking love tea. And we fucking love our guest today. While she has technically been a guest on the show before, we had technical issues and the episode never aired. She's been kind and brave enough to try it a second time. She's an Audi nominated romance narrator. She's narrated over 300 books, from sweet small town to dark and twisty and everything in between. She has a knack for dialects and a love of comedy. She rides a Harley, loves to make cocktails, and is forever on the search of the world's best tamale. Lucy Rivers, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me back.
And yes, we fucking love you, and we are so thankful that you are back.
I'm fucking glad to be here.
So we saw each other at the
convention, which should not be named.
Yeah.
The infamous one.
But we did have a chance during that time to honestly sit down and talk with you for a while, because we got to share a meal and a musical chairs sort of fashion.
Actually one of the highlights, I think, of that.
I think so too. Special event
that happened, but it was one of the times where I was like, oh, I get to just sit here and talk to people in real life that I only know from the internet.
We did talk when you were on the show previously I'm gonna go right into the biker stuff, because I feel like on a hot day like this, it's like this would be the best time to go out and just feel the wind in your face and your hair and everything, even though I'm sure that you are properly geared up when you are on your Harley. What's the thing about being on your Harley that is your favorite?
I guess it's probably two things. I think riding a motorcycle is probably the closest that I would get to feel like what it feels like to fly, not like in a plane, but like to fly. And maybe if I was a horseback rider, that would be similar. I don't know. But it kind of feels like you're flying, because you're out there in the world in such a different way than you are when you're in a car. Because it's like you can feel all the temperatures happening. Everything that's going on really affects everything.
Smell all the smells.
Riding through a rainstorm.
I have a convertible.
Less
so,
sexy than you
know.
Think. Oh, yeah. You know. You're like, oh, good.
Yeah, I have a convertible. Wow. So I'm like, oh, this is so awesome. What was that? Okay.
Yeah, you're out like...
Some died.
You're in it, which is pretty glorious. And it's also one of the few things that I have found in my life that, like, when you do it, you have to just be doing that. So my brain can't be doing 9,000 other things, because it's just not safe, and you shouldn't be doing that when you're on a motorcycle. So for me, it's also kind of a meditational thing almost, because I really have to be completely present. If I'm...
Right.
Emotional or upset or something's going on, I shouldn't go get on that bike. It's a really bad idea. Driving while angry. Yeah. Terrible idea on a motorcycle.
Don't drive angry. Yeah. Don't drive angry is not even
a good idea in the car, but especially on a bike. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, it's kind of like a meditation a little bit. It's pretty glorious. I do love it. And this is the time of year for it.
Oh, yeah. And we had talked about this. So Have you made the pilgrimage to Sturgis?
I have not, and I know that I need to. I was driving cross country from New Orleans to Los Angeles a few years back solo on my motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And I didn't, I just timed out that I was doing this ride as everyone was going to Sturgis. So I'm like driving across Texas and I would just hit these groups of bikers on Harleys and they would ride with me for a little while and then they'd take off or they'd see me at the gas station. And so I got to like do all these chunks of rides with people going to Sturgis.
Right.
But
yeah.
I've never been to Sturgis myself. It's fair. It's a shameful thing. It's shameful.
I was pleased that when we saw each other that I was able to show you because I had told you the story about the time that I went to Sturgis while it was by accident and it was not on a motorcycle. But I managed
RV.
I was in an RV and I managed to follow these guys from Utah who were just being tourists at this rest stop and took a picture with them. And I was able to show you the picture and it's one of my favorite pictures because it's just like, okay, this is me at my coolest moment ever.
I mean,
is sitting on somebody's Harley.
What a ballsy move. You were like, I don't know you. This is not in my plans. Yeah, I'm gonna go with you to Sturgis. This is also like pre-cell phone days, right? Like you're not.
This was
Adventure Gen.
Yeah,
I love it. Yeah. It's like people would be like, used to be like, yeah, I hitchhike across the country, and I was like, God, I would love to hitchhike. I mean, not. It would not end well, probably, but very cool. Very cool that you were ballsy enough to just be like, yeah, I'm going to go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
And
it's the time of saying yes to things.
Yeah, because I was in my 20s and you make decisions like that in your 20s that are just like, yeah, do it.
I don't know if I ask you this, but in your Sturgis trip in your 20s, did you like make out with a hot biker? Did you like...
No, never got that far because once I got to Sturgis, there was no place to park, at least not for an RV. That doesn't mean that I didn't make out with somebody else in another state, but no, not in Sturgis. No.
None of the bikers. Such a glorious opportunity. It's like the start of a motorcycle romance meet cute, you know?
I know.
And then we were at the gas station and I was like, sure, I'll follow you to Sturgis. And then, whoa. There were all these guys walking around with these cuts and their abs, and then off we go.
Yeah. I mean,
it could have been a white shoes.
Lucy's pitching a new MC romance here.
Yeah.
Right? I want it to be like pre-cell phone days. I kind of want it to be like this chick in her 20s.
Historical
and like
motorcycle.
60s
motorcycle.
Or 70s.
Oh my God. Like don't say historical. Don't say historical romance.
We're in trouble.
Fuck you.
But I kind of want her in these like little Daisy Dukes, you know? And she's
totally.
Yeah. And it's going to it's going to end up being like a white shoes with, I don't know how many men at Sturgis, but another.
Oh, okay.
There's a few.
There's a few. I mean, you know, Zanna doesn't like when I refer to pre-cell phone days as historical, even though technically it is. It's vintage, fine. Are you good with vintage?
Oh my God, no, I'm not okay. I'm still not okay with the whole, our time to the 80s is the same as the 80s to World War II. I'm not okay with that.
Yeah, she just can't accept it.
Not okay.
Historical to mean that's like an 1800s book. We can't be calling historical is like
meanwhile
and shit.
My son consistently says, "Well, did you have this back in the 1900s?"
He's just doing that to be a jerk. Come on,
he is.
That's
he
totally
is. He is. He's
did
being
you guys
a dick.
Have this
he's
back, being... back in the 1900s. Yeah, thanks, man.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I did, and it was actually better. How you feel about that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, my kid isn't any better. He says back in the 20th century.
Oh yeah. Way back in the 20th century.
Way back in the 20th century. Mm. And I'm like, dude.
I don't know. Somehow the way back in the 1900s feels worse.
Oh, it's totally. No, your kid is worse.
It's time to pull out the bonnets.
But he's also older. He's had more practice.
He has, yeah.
So that's
he still was not born before 2000, but you know.
Yeah. But there's So I don't have a cool kiss a biker story in my past, but I dated a biker. Does that count?
Oh, that does.
I dated
did
a biker
you know,
once.
Kiss your biker.
Yeah.
You dated a biker.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
That's great.
Briefly.
Well, that counts as a kiss a biker.
Yeah.
That's kiss a biker.
Just not at Sturgis.
I definitely made out with a few bikers. More than a few bikers.
Yeah. He was really fond of mountain trips. So a lot of time spent on the back of a bike heading up through Sierra Nevada
nice.
Mountains and yeah, so
nice.
But he is not the man that I married, so I know my husband doesn't listen, so I don't even care telling the story, but
he doesn't listen, but he did build you a booth.
He did build me a booth, and right. Yeah, so there is that. But yeah, he doesn't listen. Her husband doesn't listen. He just walks around going to
our merch.
Yeah, with our merch on, and walks around the grocery store and finds random fans of ours, which surprises the hell out of me.
That's pretty great. He walks around in the t-shirt and like, yeah, he's like a walking billboard.
Yeah,
well,
he is.
Done.
He is.
I mean, that's not nothing, right?
Yeah.
It's not nothing.
They show their love to us and love and support.
Yeah, I'm looking at him through the window right now, and he's wearing our shirt.
Oh, so. Of course he is.
Okay, so I have a question. Does he only own your shirts? Are those the only shirts that he owns?
Oh, okay. No.
Because that would be amazing if you were like, you just clear out his closet and all of a sudden it's just your shirts. And you're like, sorry.
No. Just cup and saucy
that's the
wardrobe.
Only option.
Oh, man.
It's just his favorite shirt.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So I got to admit, they're comfortable shirts. But speaking of merch, I got the most wonderful patch from you. Speaking of motorcycles and merch.
I've got mine right here.
Yeah, I've got mine right here. I haven't put it on anything yet. It's over here on my wall with all of my cool stuff. Right next to my favorite card that I got from Xana. So these are gifts from all of my favorite people.
that was designed by a fan in the fan group who lives in I think Nebraska. She designed it just for fun and sent it to me. And then I was like, can I make these? I won't sell them. I just want to make them and give them to people because they're really
right.
cool.
Right. Because they're cool.
And deeply inappropriate, but only if you really pay attention to the
shape
of the microphone.
I have to admit that I didn't see that at first until I got it home. And then I went, of course, that's what the microphone looks like.
Of course, that's what the microphone is.
Really? Like. You didn't see that until you got home?
How many things did we collect in that day? And then just, you know. I put it all in a bag and sort it later.
That's fair.
So your group that this comes from is Lucy's Libertines. Can you tell us about how that got started?
Two lovely ladies, Erin and Kat, I'll be honest, kind of bullied me into it, I say with love. But at the time, I was only on Facebook and Twitter as Lucy, and they started harassing me on Twitter in DMs saying, you need to be on Instagram. And they finally got me on Instagram, and they're like, we're going to start a fan group. You're going to let us start a fan group, right? And they just kept pushing, and I was like, okay. Because they're really nice, and they sweetly bullied me into being both on Instagram and having a little fan group. So the fan group's, you know, it's fun. It's mostly silliness and cocktails talk about books, you know? It's pretty chill as all this.
Well, knowing both Kat and Erin, sweetly bullying is the perfect description because I can absolutely see them doing it.
Absolutely. Like killer with kindness. They just were persistent.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, okay, fine. Fine. I guess we'll do it. And they were right because obviously Instagram is where all the people
right.
are. So it's fine. They
yeah.
were right.
Yeah.
They were right.
So were they the ones who also got you onto TikTok too?
Yes. Yes. I've been drug into all of the things now.
Yeah,
it's fine. There's gonna be a new thing in like a month or something.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah,
there'll
like,
be some new social.
Now, there'll be some new thing that I'm gonna be like, what do I do? I don't know. How does this work?
How do I do this?
What do I do? I know. I was like, TikTok confused the hell out of me when I first got on. I was like, I don't understand.
It still confuses the heck out of me. To
I'm
be honest,
I'm very confused. Which makes me sound old and like I can't use tech, and that's okay. I'm leaning in.
Yeah, I don't get it either, but I mean, I use it because we kind of have to, but it's like none of these things are designed in a way that makes it easy for anybody to use. I mean, if we're, you know, because there's some aspect of it that you don't understand. Either you don't understand how to make a video, or you don't understand how to read analytics, or you don't understand, you know, how to make a video go viral, or, you know,
right,
whatever.
The culture of it, the whatever it is.
Yeah, the like, culture
wait,
of it. I mean, nobody understands all of it.
Okay. Yeah.
So if that makes you feel any better, nobody gets all of it.
Yeah, it's good because I just do my thing and I'm like, I don't know if I fully understand what I'm doing over here, but that's okay. It's okay. It's fine.
You have managed to find your own little special niche on social media, and we love you so much for this because you provide a helpful public service with your nature PSAs.
Look, I spend a lot of time in nature. I'm a big hiker.
Yeah.
And I want people to be safe. It's all just, it's just safety first. That's all it is.
It's public service.
It's public service, really. I care about people not
service.
Being eaten by bears or getting lost or, you know,
those are important things.
Yeah.
Just try to provide a service. That's really all I'm doing. Yeah.
And we are going to provide links to some of our favorite of Lucy's PSAs on the show notes page after this episode,
Excellent.
When this episode airs. And which one's your favorite? Do you have a favorite?
Do I have a favorite? There was definitely one that's kind of an ice field, an ice flow.
Oh, yes.
Maybe it's even a glacier that really makes me happy. It's very beautiful and slick. Very slick. Lots of slick. You can slide on, which you don't want to do. You could hurt yourself.
Yes.
No, right.
Yes, but it's beautiful. It's beautiful to look at.
Absolutely. It's stunning. And I always enjoy a good landmark that's tall and large and distinctive.
Firm.
Yes. So that you can recognize it from afar and orient your way to where you want to go.
Yes.
Mm.
Well, and you are providing, as we said, a public service here. And it's also, you are helping the environment because you are talking about, you know, these places on the planet that need to be protected. And even down to endangered species that you know, needs special care.
Oh, right. You just really have to take care of them. We really want to be gentle.
Yeah.
Really take our time in nature, be gentle with nature, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean,
that's the
really
best way to appreciate
it. Through
it.
Which sometimes you just want to bang through the hike, you know. Sometimes
right.
Like,
you know,
you just
sometimes.
Go hard. You just want to.
Sometimes
really
you just got to get it.
Get her
it
done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just need like a quickie of a hike is what I'm saying. You just need a got to get in, get out kind of thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Got to do
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of being out in nature, one of your upcoming or one of the books that you have done recently is nature centered, sort of, The Lowell Lumberjacks. We talked with Daphne Elliott at that book event and that we were all at, and she was so excited to know that you were going to be the voice for her characters for Would You Be Mine? And you did that with Stephen
Bourne.
No
notes. That's a wonderful. I love that one.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this whole series. Stephen and I are going like back and forth in DMs, just be like, it's so good. It's so good.
It is.
We're having so much fun. It's like the perfect mix of humor and small town and some heat and some sass. And then there's like a little bit of mystery going on throughout the entire series that you're trying to figure out.
Nice.
A bit of a whodunit. I love this series. I think it's so well written and so fun and funny. And I really, you know, I can get on board with a good billionaire romance. Don't get me wrong. But there is something that I really love about finding romances that are well-written and fun and sexy and hot. But you're like, yeah, she's like a school principal. And he's like a works at a logging company, and they're like, have, you know, real jobs and like have a life. Yeah. And you have to go to work, and then you're like, oh, right, like real people, right?
Where the job is not being a well-paid rich person.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I really, I appreciate the billionaire genre. I don't want to, you know, diss it, but I do love a good romance where I'm like, oh my god, these are like real people paying rent and going to work and.
and just living their lives and hoping to find love in an HEA because we all deserve one. So
we do. We all deserve one. It's a really great series. I've narrated now the first three. Only the first one is out, and I'm very close to getting to book four, and I'm very excited. Although I'll be sad when it's
I have read eyeball read those before they. You know, before she started making audios of them.
Don't tell me who did it. Don't tell me.
I'm not giving Adele. Anything away.
Adele with the Viking, and it's going to be hot, but they're also like the, you know, town enemies, and it's, oh my God.
But
I can't wait. And she's like a 6 foot tall Viking.
All I'm
going to
say is you're
going to
love it.
Oh my God.
Nice.
Can't even wait. She's like this beast. She's a fucking mechanic, and she's like 6'2", and she's ripped.
Oh, she's fierce. Love
super
her.
Into it. I'm super into it. It's a great series. And there's Clive the Moose, who does appear in every book.
Yeah. Clive, you know, I said to her when I met her, I was like, so can we just get, you know, he doesn't need a full book. We can just make it a novella, but Clive, it's got to have his own thing, man.
He could like fall in love with a duck or something.
I don't know.
It's like a moose and a goose, and they could have this star-crossed romance where they, you know, they can snuggle, but they can't really. But like the goose could ride on top of him, you know.
Okay.
And they could. I don't know, Daphne. What if?
Okay, so this might be an unpopular opinion, and I might just be like way out here, but do you think he's a shifter? I secretly think he's a shifter.
Oh. What if he's like, what's the Paul Bunyan?
What oh my God.
He's the Paul Bunyan shifter. He's been around for years, haunting the woods. And every once in a while. Yeah. Didn't Paul Bunyan have an animal? Did he run around with an animal?
Yeah, he had
an ox?
Babe the Big Blue Ox.
The Big Blue Ox.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, that is now canon in my head. So even if it's not,
even if Daphne says no, Daphne, we've got some notes.
We have some notes, Daphne.
We have some notes
and
for you.
we're gonna get her on the show very soon, and I'm going to ask her.
You can definitely tell her that Stephen and I truly DM each other back and forth about this series because we're just like, it's so good. It's so good. We're having so much fun with it.
Oh, I love
and
it.
And he's got like the perfect grumpy raspy
voice. Oh, he does.
Voice.
He
oh,
does
my
grumpy
God.
Voice very
oh.
well.
Oh, he's got that kind of low growly kind of thing going on. And I'm like, okay, Stephen. Okay, I'm not mad at it at all.
Yeah, I completely buy him as Lumberjack Man. Yeah,
you know, me too.
So, and there's a whole lot of, I know this could come as no surprise to Zanna, but there's a whole lot of forced proximity in the cabin tropes going on.
And I wonder why you like this.
I can't imagine.
If you wouldn't mind, would you ask Daphne if she picked the last name Gagnon because it's kind of like gagging on it? Yeah. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I was like, that's a very specific last name choice, Daphne. Interesting.
I will definitely ask her about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just wondering where her brain was because I know where mine went. You know what I'm saying?
You know, speaking to those particular tropes though, you did one. I have a rule for myself that I do not read anything with a Santa title or anything where, you know, Santa or his family is in any way involved. My stepfather was a professional Santa Claus for 20 years. So like, that's just a nope for me.
Nope. That's a hard no.
I have an exception to this, and it's one of yours that you narrated, Provoking Saint Nick, because it doesn't actually have Santa Claus anywhere in there. But Provoking Saint Nick by Echo Grace, because, again, forced proximity, only one bed, they're in a snowstorm, you know, all of that stuff. So you made me break my Santa title rule.
I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. It's another funny one. Like,
she
a
doesn't
lot
sound sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sorry at all. Also, there's a lot of sex toys in it, and that really makes me happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he finds them at first. And then she lays them out around him on the bed and takes a picture of it. I was like, yeah. I like this girl.
It's really funny. And I love seeing you do funny books, you know, because my mm-hmm. introduction to you was some really pretty dark stuff. And you did, you know, a lot of dark or serious. I mean, like Love in the Wild wasn't dark, but it was definitely serious and dramatic.
Not a funny one.
But to see you do a fun, you know, fun rom-com-y kind of stuff is just, I love it.
Delightful, yeah.
I love comedy.
Well, especially since we got to meet you and realized just, you know, what a great sense of humor and how funny you are in real life. So,
back in acting school, I was in the improv comedy troupe. I definitely did a bunch of farces. I loved doing farces. I love comedy. So every time I get a funny book, I'm like, yeah, let's lean in. Yeah. It's a little Lucille Ball. Makes me happy.
Yeah.
But I do think that people who are really good at comedy tend to be also really good at drama. And so that timing, that comedic timing translates extremely well to dramatic reading as well. So,
yeah. Yes. Yeah, not to say I don't like my dark, dark books, because I do read some dark, dark books.
Oh, yeah.
And I appreciate those in a different way. Yeah.
Yes. And another series that's definitely not in the comedy space, but in the darker space, the Hollow Boys series by Monty J that you did with another friend of the show, Grayson Owens. And I know that he was excited to work with you. He told us that immediately on. He's like, I get to work with Lucy. This is going to be great. So what was, how was doing all of that? Because you guys did those rather quickly, didn't you?
We did them kind of back to back. Yeah. That was my first time working with him. We were both excited about it. I'd had people DMing me like, when are you going to do your first book with Grayson? And I was like, guys, I don't have any control over this, but yeah, I'd love to, but I don't know. So it was nice when that came through and we got to work together. He's such a delight. He's really collaborative, nice guy. He definitely is sharing samples back and forth and like really into the figuring it all out. And I like doing series where you stay with the same narrator all the way through, but you have multiple characters because you're building the world together. And it's, I think it's really fun. And so it was really cool that we got to do that on this one, even though it's not a light book at all. It's definitely kind of the dark academia
thing.
Dark college students and death and lots of bad things happen. I think that's how we can describe those books.
Yeah. Lots of bad things happen. I haven't gotten through them all yet, but you know, there've been, everybody keeps doing great work and I have to, I have to listen to that. And I have to listen to that.
I know. My to be read and to be listened list just never gets, shorter.
If I could spread it out, I could just walk to Xana and back and no problem. And we're across the country from each other. So,
but that's been a really fun series to do. And I know a lot of fans from Eyeball Reading have been really happy to have it in audio and following along. And then that's always fun. Yeah.
The Everseas series.
Yeah.
LJ Andrews.
LJ Andrews. Yep.
Yeah. And you're working with Will Thorne on those.
I am, the delightful British Will Thorne.
Oh yeah, wow.
It's a fun romantasy series. It's a a bit on the darker side, but it's kind of like pirates and fae, and there's magic, and Some kidnapping and forced dubious con stuff there, here and there, but it's quite hot. It's quite hot. It's a good time. So that's really fun. And the second book is coming out soon. And then we get into recording the third book in maybe about a month. So, yeah.
Book one is the only one that's come out so far, but book two will be in a few days.
And book three is, I'm going to say, in the fall, September, maybe.
November is the release date I'm seeing. So we'll be looking forward to that then.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to that one still. I've not recorded it yet. She builds really beautiful worlds. It's really fun.
Yeah. I've heard they're complex within, cause she doesn't, the ones who do romanticy are, you know, they can build these really complex worlds, but they take a lot of pages to do it. You know, I'm thinking of ACOTAR and stuff like that. But she's good at making them more compact, right? It's like not quite so, okay, so I have built you this world, but I have built it in this large tome of a book that's going to take you a while to get through.
It's going to take you 8 books before they kiss. But hold on, it's coming. She still has some world building, and it is a bit of a slower burn, but she does get into it faster, I think, and doesn't make some of the politics. Sometimes the romanticy books are like the politics and all of that can get quite complex. And hers are, I think, as you said, a little more compact.
Yeah. I mean, they're not short books, you know, the book two is like 13 hours long, so it's not, you know, it is perfectly reasonably average sized books.
Okay. For a fantasy or a romanticy, definitely.
Yeah, definitely for that.
Fantasy does tend to be longer, and romanticy, I guess, along with that. But
yeah, I would say they're definitely longer than the average.
Well, you got to do a whole lot of world building. You know.
It takes time.
Yeah, as we said,
And if you like that genre, you want that, right? You want to get into it and get to know the world and get to know the rules of the world. I love that, like figuring out what the rules are and how the magic works and all of it. So I'm into it. But I grew up reading fantasy. That was my genre as a young human.
Yeah. Are you a Tolkien?
I read all the Tolkien. I think I was in fifth grade when my librarian gave me
Outlander?
Dragon Riders of Pern is like the...
Oh, yeah. Outlander was later.
I did read Outlander, though, when it first came out, like well before like the TV made it popular. Well before. I got on that train real early.
Speaking of heavy tome books, my goodness.
I know. I will say, I think there was at some point that I was like, okay, I think I have to be done. We're on book, like, I don't know. What is this? Yeah. Book 12? It's like the Wheel of Time series. You're like, okay, we're on like book 9. I think I'm done.
My husband's read the Wheel of Time, and he's just like,
okay,
can I be done?
That's one of his favorites.
I feel like 3 to 6 books is kind of what you get. And if you get it over 6 books, I'm like, all right, come on now.
How many stories are we telling here? Because, while I love to see, a side character get their own, you know, from one book, get their own book later on and all of that sort of stuff, it does kind of like...
At some point, you're telling the same story over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. I think the longest that I have ever committed to a series was Sherilyn Kenyon, and I think I read 12 or 13 of her Dark Hunter novels. Okay, so I'm going to throw one name out that I have not seen you paired with, and I'm wondering if that we can put that into making that happen. John Hartley, have you worked with John Hartley?
I don't think so.
Ha.
I don't think so.
Found one. Yes.
She's in Jen's in her John Hartley era.
I am truly
my
John
brain
Hartley
though, of like, because lots of people have two names. So then I have to do the math in my brain of like,
right,
have I worked with John? Is that his only name? You know, there's a lot of math that goes on there.
There's a lot of that goes on. True.
I don't think I've worked with John Hartley. Can you make that happen? Can you put some calls
in? Yeah. We're gonna put that out there and make that happen.
Great. Just put some calls into whoever you have to call for that.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. John Hartley. I don't think I even know his work. I will look him up.
Mate Games. That'll be my first first titles to tell you.
That sounds like a fun game, if you ask me.
The Mate Games series? Yes. That's when we had him on the show. So that'll be
it's like chess,
and Lorraine and Megan
sex.
And
yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, exactly.
Like chess,
basically.
But with sex? Great.
Well, yeah, it's the four horsewomen of the apocalypse, and they're
they're causing havoc.
Yeah.
I see. Well, good for them.
They've decided that basically the Mate Games is the four horsewomen of the apocalypse have decided that because they can't bring about the apocalypse themselves and they need to get, you know, other creatures involved, that the way to do that is to join people up in white shoes groups, and that's how the apocalypse happens. So Kim, Meg, so sorry to summarize it in that way, but
so just to be clear, what happens is they fuck the apocalypse into being.
Yes,
that's exactly
it.
Right.
That is exactly
all right.
It.
All right. I mean, I can get behind that. What happened? How come there's an apocalypse? Well, there was a lot of sex. There was just a lot of sex. There was so much sex that I don't know. The world imploded. What can I say? They were having
it's, you know, shifters and humans and vampires and demons and everybody just has sex. Yeah.
All at the same time. And it was just too much. It was just too much.
And too much for the earth to handle.
Yeah. I mean, at least you're going out with a bang.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you have done a lot of the paranormals and the dark and everything, I do want to get back to one, because this was a favorite book of ours, and I know it's a favorite book of yours, because we can't have any sort of take two of our interview without talking about Love in the Wild.
Oh,
because
I love Love in the Wild.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was a great book.
It's a great book, and it was one of those books that when I got Emma, I say this with love, but when I got it, I was like, it's a Tarzan retelling? Okay.
Right.
I guess this is what I'm narrating. And then I started prepping. I was like, oh shit, it's like beautiful.
Really well done.
It's such a beautiful book. And it was such a surprise, I think, because I was a closed-minded little idiot who was like, a Tarzan retelling? Oh my God.
I went deep on that one, because in addition to reading Love in the Wild and listening to you and Shane narrate it, I also eyeball read the original Edgar Rice Burroughs Tarzan for the episode, because I didn't feel like I knew the story. I mean, I knew the story from Disney and from the '80s movie and from a couple other things.
It kind of exists in pop culture, I think.
Right, and just just because. And so I read that, and it's very, very different time. It's, you know, over 100 years ago, written as pulp fiction, and it's very racist. It's very colonial. It's very, you know, sexist and all that sort of stuff. But it gave me a greater appreciation for Emma's work. So that she was able to update it in such a way that made sense.
Yeah.
And whereas the original material didn't actually make all that much sense. So
She made it like this beautiful love story that's also about the planet and nature and existing within different societies, both human and animal. It's really impressive what she did. And Shane and I had a lot of fun on that one, because we were both very aware that Tarzan was starting with very little English and kind of progressing as it
went on. Right.
And so he and I would have phone calls of like, okay, so at what point in the book does he really become fluent for you? And where is he in this, on your version of him, right? So we were trying to kind of line up his fluency as best we could together, even though we're recording, you know, our chapters separately, which was a really kind of fun challenge. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And that was a fun part of that for both he and I, of going back and forth of like, okay, so when does he just, you know, sound like Shane and he's just like this really beautiful British man that you just want to make out with, you know, but like, when do you get there?
I love to hear that, because when we reviewed the book, this was one of the things that most caught me about the audiobook versus, you know, actually reading it on the page, is because then you get to hear that progression in his language and how he goes from, and, you know, considering that his British English is only from, you know, age 3 and what he kind of sort of remembers from his parents, and, you know, but he's learning English from somebody for whom English is not their first language. And so it just gave this more depth. And I love that the two of you work together to make him a fully, you know, three-dimensional, you know, not just the character as he's written, but also in the voice. So
yeah, that was really important to both of us. It was a fun book and a fun challenge. It's the only time thus far that could change that I've ever narrated from the point of view of a gorilla.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like that was, again, surprising. And I was super thrilled in it. And I had asking myself all the questions of like, how do I do this? And I was like, okay, don't overthink it. But, you know, overthink it, but don't overthink it. Yeah, it was the first time that's ever happened. It's a surprising book. And I feel like every time people find it, I get notes from people online who are just like, oh my God, I found this book and it's amazing. And I'm like, yay, yay. Yeah. That, yeah. Emma's book is out there and I think surprising all of us, which is great.
Yeah, and we really do hope more people discover it, because it's well written, it's well researched, and it's not, there is like this sliver of a magic element to it, mm-hmm. but it is not supernatural or paranormal in any way. It is respectful of the planet, it's respectful of the cultures that are involved, you know, and at the same time, knowing where her source material is from the Edgar Rice Burroughs, that she's like, yeah, okay, this is where I got this story from, but that it isn't all that it has to be, you know, it doesn't
right.
just have to stay
yeah,
there.
She elevates the source material. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so
it's a beautiful book. One of my favorites to date. And I love that people keep discovering it in their own time.
Yeah. And you know, this is the great thing about any book or audiobook, is that just because this is the newest, you know, thing and the next thing that's come out, and the stories are still being written every day and still being narrated every day, that doesn't mean that you don't get to go back and rediscover, you know, the gems that are out there. And that's not saying, I mean, this book is what, 2 years old? So it's not like it's not
exactly ancient history.
It's not, you know,
but I don't remember when. No, it's been out for a little while. And
yeah,
it just seems to kind of pop up every once in a while and people pass it around to their friends. And I love that. That's the mark, I think, of a good book, is every once in a while, yep, it just pops up again because someone's recommended it and it keeps living and moving on. It's really great.
Yeah. And so now you are also, I mean, we've talked about the people that you have worked with, but there, you've done a lot of solo stuff too. In fact, there's the Tangled Crown series that's got one, the second book of that is coming out.
Yeah.
By Ann Denton, that you're doing solo. Do you, now it's, you know, always a interesting question to ask the narrators, you know, do you prefer doing solo narration, doing dual narration? And I know that there's pluses and minuses to all the different types, but is there something that you particularly enjoy about solo narration as opposed to collaborating with other narrators?
That's an interesting question. I enjoy all forms of it, and it's really about what's right for the story, for mm-hmm. sure. This series for Ann Denton, the first three books are solo and they're all me, and then the second three books, so it's a 6-book series, will add a gent to it. I'm actually recording book 3 right now. It's a very funny, romantic-y, white shoes, lots of magic, lots of politics. And it's a great ride. I'm really, really enjoying it. I think, if anything, it's just sometimes doing a solo narration really just lets you, in a very selfish way, like, you get to live the whole book, you know? Yeah. Because when I'm doing a duel, you're kind of skimming off on what the guys are doing, so you know what's happening in between, and you're starting your next chapter in the right headspace, coming out of whatever they're doing, but you're not reading it word for word and feeling every little thing. And when you solo narrate, you really get to like live the whole book all the way through. And sometimes I miss that when I do multicasts, because I'm always like, oh, look at that little part over there, but I don't get to live that part.
Yeah, but now I get to live that part. I get to do all of it in the solo books. Sure. Yeah,
in a very selfish way, it is kind of fun sometimes to really do a full story from beginning to end and just like ride that whole arc with the characters. Yeah.
Getting to work with other people and in the case of book events, getting to actually see the people that you work with. There is the one that we won't name, but are there any others that you're planning on doing? Because this was your first one. Was this your first one?
This was my first one in a while.
Definitely
not my first one. Yeah. I had done some Love in Vegas, and I actually was going to RWA way back in the day when they were still doing their thing. So I was part of a group of narrators. I think the first one we did all together was in Atlanta, and it was the Romance Writers Conference at the time, kind of the big kahuna. And we all got together and we were like, look, we need to be in that space, because narrators didn't go to book cons at that point. No narrators were going to book cons. That just wasn't a thing. It was authors only. So a bunch of us banded together, some, you know, old schools, Andy Arndt and those folks and Aiden Snow. And it was this great group of people. And we all got together and we bought a table and we showed it up at RWA. And we were going to be like, here we are as narrators. And it was a really good time, but they had no idea what to do with us. They put us in the corner in the back and they were like, we don't know what you're doing here.
Yeah.
Hit us in a corner in the back. And we kind of got to talk to some people. And then we kept doing it. So I did, I think, 3 RWAs before they shifted or rebranded or whatever they did, and a few other book cons. And then taking a few years off and coming back to the one that shall not be named, I was shocked at just, like, there were people there to see narrators. And I feel like
a
lot of the ones I had gone to early on, they really just didn't. They didn't know what to do with
it. Shove them in the corner somewhere. Oh, yeah. And, you know.
Yes, right? Like, that's not what was happening. We were there.
Oh, no,
kind
you
of
guys were a draw. Yeah. You were a draw.
Yeah, so narrators have increasingly sort of started becoming rock stars. And so just in their own right, which is great and really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. It's a very different thing than being hidden in the corner. So I have one more this year. I'm heading to... the longest title ever. Romance Invades the Canadian Rockies. Calgary at the end of July. So I'm very much looking forward to that. It's a good group of authors and a great group of
narrators. it's a good convention. I went last year when it was in Banff and won't be able to come back to Calgary, but Calgary's a pretty city. So
So I'm gonna
definitely take some time and go hiking up there too.
Oh, I rented a car just to go hiking in Banff. I was like, I'm
gonna
be there.
It's
I'm
worth
going
it.
Going to Banff.
It's worth it.
I'll try.
Yeah, it's so pretty.
I'll try to find something.
It's ridiculously pretty.
And don't forget your bear spray.
Yeah.
Don't forget your bear spray.
I'll be looking for something for a PSA for you all in Banff.
Yes.
Excellent.
We would love that. We would love that. Yes, safety first.
So yeah, I'm doing that one this year. And then next year, we'll see. I'm trying to do at least 2 every year. So, yeah.
Okay.
That's a very reasonable amount to do.
That is way more reasonable than what we did last year.
Yeah. Or even what we're doing this year.
you could burn yourself out, I think, if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we are so, so, so thrilled that we got to meet you and then we got to do this again. And thank you. Thank you so much, Lucy, for being on the show and for coming back and braving it a second time.
Thank you so much for having me. And maybe it was better this time. I don't remember what we said the first time, but hopefully.
I'm hoping the sound is better.
We're all hoping that
the conversation and the conversation, you know, we're just having a conversation with a friend.
Yeah.
Hopefully
now you're a friend of the show, friend of ours. And yeah, so that's the best part.
Yeah, it's been
you
know, really.
Well, you always sound a little like a serial killer.
I don't know what you're talking about.
In the best way.
I don't know.
Yeah, from Xana, that's a compliment. That is a huge compliment.
I'm just saying, like, if there are bodies in the desert, I'm not going to tell you exactly where they are. I just, you know, girls got to do what a girl's gotta do.
So the key is, don't use a shallow grave.
No, you really got to get them down there because otherwise something's
going
to get
it up. At least 10 feet.
Yeah.
Because you got to think about the wildlife that's going to, you know, dig it up.
Or would you want a shallow grave so the wildlife spreads the bones for you?
No, what you want to do is at least 4 or 5 feet and then put an animal on top.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. All right. Because then they get to the animal first.
They get a hit on a body and they find the animal.
They find the animal first.
Uh-huh. Right. And then that's just thinking.
I admire your mind so much, Xana, which, you know, is to say that you scare the bejesus out of me, but
I mean these things are just thought exercises.
Yeah. You know, it's just logic. It's just you're just being practical.
I do enjoy a good mystery.
It's a mystery. So do I. I love it when people die. I mean, not in real life, but like in books and movies. I do like it.
Yes.
I do.
Yes. We enjoy that.
I know. I really like it.
Literary death is the best kind.
Oh,
and
right?
Little death.
And I really like it when they actually fool me because usually I know. So if you can write the thing where I'm like, oh man. Yeah. I'm really impressed when you can sneak one in on me.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't happen often, but occasionally I'll get one that's like, whoa, I did not see that coming.
Yeah. So good. Oh.
Yeah. Those are the good surprises.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Lucy. And this is too much fun. And it was over too soon, even though we're already looking at the clock and going, wow, okay. Another hour flew by.
Yes, indeed. Thank you for having me. If anyone has favorite tamales, please send them my way.
We will. And all of the information about Lucy, including links to Lucy's Libertines Facebook group and everything that we talked about, all of her socials so that you can send her those tamale links. Everything that we talked about today will be on the show notes page on our website, cupandsaucybooks.com.
You can also follow us on social media at Cup and Saucy Books. We're on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what you hear, review and subscribe to the show on your favorite pod platform. We also review books that Jen makes me read on our YouTube channel, Cup and Saucy Books.
Thank you for joining us for the Cup and Saucy Book Club. Join us next time for more great conversations with people from the world of books.
And probably a few tangents.
Happy reading.
Cheers.